The comments which follow are excerpts of telephone calls made during September and October of 1969 in preparation for the Museum of Contemporary Art's Art by Telephone exhibition. Each artist in this exhibition described his proposal with enough detail so that the museum could create the actual piece in Chicago while the artist remained at home. For example, C. Armajani explained,
"So, first of all, I was going to tell you that the title of it, it's called A Fairly Large Number, F-A-I-R-L-Y, large number, and it's a 1 million digit number, okay? So, you know, it's achieved through the running a simple program through a computer, and the program is written in Fortran. Now, I'm going to read a program to you now.
Okay. What do you
care? But the label then would make it not okay because you don't have stolen things so labeled, especially in a museum. I mean, this is where my thinking was on. It's tripping somebody up. The people seeing the label, those who know me will know that it wasn't kidding around, that it was in fact done, that the label tells the truth. So where is it? In the label? Or in the rug? Or interaction between the two? Or interaction between the viewer, the rug, and the label? Or between the viewer, the rug, the label, and the museum? It's all of those things.
John Baldessari. What I've been trying to do for the last, well, at least one kind of thing I've been working on for the last couple of years is trying to push an idea of painting a little bit further. I'm somewhat, you know, of the opinion that painting is dead, but I think there's some interesting areas in which it can still be pushed. And so I did it, you know,
something would happen if you kept going from
name of International Telephone is something which has been written about a piece which I did, which was about language. So it keeps folding back on itself, and the text which is by John Chandler from an article in Arts International in last November, is entitled The Last Word in Graphic Art.
George Brecht in London.
Right. Well, the project that I'm working on now that's occupying all of my time is a kind of research into the possibility of moving land masses over the surface of the Earth. And it occurred to me that this might be a good opportunity to show that to see what people's opinions are on this. No, well, it's a very large project which has all kinds of aspects. So far, I've been working on the technical aspects. For example, the geology of England, for example. How deep, for example, do you have to cut England off in order not to lose the coal mine, if that's important. How to float a landmass over the ocean. Things like that. But of course, you can see that it's quite far-reaching. What are the effects on people's lives if their land is moved to another place on the surface of the Earth? What is the psychological effect? And all those things come into the research. So
this is part of the research. This is part of the public opinion poll.
It's a kind of public opinion poll, exactly. Yeah.
Jack Burnham?
For a long time, I've been interested in washed out light. And the fact is that, I've seen a lot of light sculpture, and quite often when it's published and photographed, the photographs are taken and darkened. And the thing that interests me is my tape lights is that they are a low level of illumination. And so, what I want to do is to take a number of them, say somewhere between 40 and 60, and hang them up in a room like a spaghetti, so that they'd all be facing one way. And you walk into the room and just have them hanging there, just three-foot strip. At the other end of the room, mounted as close to the ceiling as possible, I'd have a very strong 500 or 750 watt lamp. The lamp would have heavy violet gelatin, and it would also be motorized so that it would go on and off in cycles of about 30 seconds. And what I'm trying to get here is the fact that the room will be absolutely dark, and your eyes see nothing but green strips, not be acclimated to the dark at all, but just black and green. And all of a sudden, it can start to get light again, and lighter and lighter and lighter, until the whole room is intense violet. And you just see these stupid looking strips standing there, and they're washed out, have no intense, no light intensity at all. And that's the central idea behind the piece. It's called Ultraviolet.
James Lee Byers.
It would be simply that you would fly me out there on the spot, red, as I even gave you the paint name, Benjamin Moore.
Yes, I got it.
A kind of old enamel. And I would like to go out into the middle of the spot, and if it's in this case, then I would like to have, say, if you make a spot, a round spot, 20 feet in diameter, then I would like to have a red silk disc with me in the middle with two arm holes as well as a head hole. So I could walk out there with a telephone, and also in pre-arrangement with Rob Grier, since John Vandermark is now on his way to Europe, I suppose, like me.
Yes, he's there.
And he would speak to Rob. Philip Grier, who stepped in his room on his floor, usually in Paris at the publishing house, awaiting calls, I suppose. The fact that, anyway, that it would be at a particular time that he and I would simultaneously pick up the phone and say nothing as, in essence, the first meeting.
He would say nothing, but you would pick up the phone.
That's right. And I mean, such an incredible, to me, an incredible dramatization of the importance of first meeting.
Yes.
I love Christopher Marlowe. The only line that Shakespeare ever wrote in his entire works, I don't know if I included that in the letter or not, was to Christopher Marlowe, and Sweet Tooth, he says, and as you like it, live and love it, but not in first sight. Finally, you know, I mean the elasticity of words. I mean, that's a ritualistic question. Hello. And I love it. And it, anyway, I've learned a great deal from the film. I'm excited about it. And, I mean, it's a very exciting possible show for me. I love it. As far as I'm concerned, the more dramatic and the more elegant it is, the better. And what I would like to do is simply walk into the room with carrying my complete unit of operatas, you know, and sit down and make the call.
Robert Cumming.
Four telephone lines connected each to an automatic answering set. each one will have a separate two-minute message by 36 poem by 36 poets, and they'll be changed every day.
And the president,
who are the poets? Well, there's 36, and it's Allen Ginsberg and William Burroughs and Anne Waldman, myself and Jim Carroll and Abby Hoffman and
other readers on poetry.
Yeah. Instructions were to them was anything they wanted to do in a two-minute period, and we have like 12 two-minute pieces from each poet.
Robert Grosvenor.
The material is quartering stainless steel cables coated with a clear plastic coating. It's the same kind of cable that's used on boats and airplanes. It's called tiller wire. And you can find it in any marine hardware store. Basically, the piece is...
A little louder, I can't quite hear.
Okay, basically the piece is a cable that is stretched approximately 4 to 6 inches underneath the ceiling, horizontally, from corner to corner in a room.
Oh.
And that goes over to a corner, and then it goes down to the floor. So there's a vertical line along the ceiling, a horizontal line along the ceiling, and a vertical line from ceiling to floor. It'll have to be supported by a very fine diagonal wire, like some kind of piano wire. The kind of piece that either disappears or comes across very strongly, I think.
Hans Hocker.
Ideally, the room should be empty.
Oh.
And blank walls and nothing of any visual interest. And the only thing that we are aiming at is that there's a noticeable difference in temperature from the space that you come from. And this space that we are talking about.
What ideally would you like to see people react to?
Well, just witnessing what it is.
That it's an empty but cold room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, this is a whole thing of a piece that has a meteorological background, if you want to say so. Climatological. I don't know.
Because certainly you can experience a climatological change just by walking outside in the winter.
Oh, yes.
And
well, but for that matter, you can experience almost anything that is being presented in galleries and museums for the last couple of thousand years in a slightly different manner in daily life.
So your thing is a focus on just the one aspect of it.
Yeah.
Richard Hamilton in London talks to Ed Paskey in New York.
But I am interested to discover whether the result is pretty much like the result that would have been if I were to adopt the same set of rules. In fact, I may well engage in the same occupation in London and then it will be quite interesting to compare the two results. The subject, I suppose, is the conflict between a photographic reproduction
has the ball head.
Big Higgins?
Well, the piece should have the abyss effect. You pick up the telephone, it turns on the tape recorder. You start to speak. You hear your own voice after a while with whatever else is already on the loop. Gradually, well, the first person to pick it up would probably hear absolutely nothing. But by the time the loop had come back where it started for the second person, you'd start to get a signal. What keeps the thing from erasing itself?
The erase head simply has to be disconnected.
A lot of people would probably say obscenity. A lot of other people would probably recite Lincoln's Gettysburg Address or something like that.
Without the erase head, it'll all impact on top of each other.
Well, you'll just gradually get a vocal collage build up. It's essentially a musical. Never done visual art. I mean, that's not to say that I haven't made cartoons and so on from time to time, and that I can't draw, but you're more interested in essentially literature,
a sort of performing, time-spanning piece.
Yeah. When I married Alice, then I said that I was going to leave the visual stuff to her.
Robert Hilo?
First Arthur, under A.
I see.
The first Arthur under A.
Okay.
His phone number and the city and area code, say Arthur A. of Atlanta, area code such and such, and phone number would be listed. And secondly, Arthur, maybe Ball, B-A-A-L in Baltimore, then Arthur, Karn, or what, you know, whatever it is.
Okay.
All the Arthurs with the first last name of A, B, C.
There'll be 26 Arthurs.
Right, 26 Arthurs. From, with the last names A, Q, Z, from cities, the first available city with the with the same letter like A, from Atlanta, Baltimore, Cincinnati, whatever. And there is one thing that below this list, there would be simply a statement saying, call any of the above numbers and ask for Art.
I was going to ask you why Arthur. I'm afraid I know.
Now you know.
Yes. Arthur's telephone.
Alas, okay.
The point is that it's a piece, that will be painted on the wall, directly on the wall, with transparent paint, and it consists of stripes of 2 feet wide, and the height of the wall, from the ceiling to the floor.
Okay.
Yes, that could be displayed anywhere you want in the museum. So that's 10 stripes of transparent clear paint that goes from one coat to 10 coats.
What is it that you find particularly appealing about it? What engages your interest?
I don't have any feeling about it.
You must.
I like the idea of having a different number of coats on the same wall, but it's just that.
Ed Keenholm?
I just like the idea of a photograph to weigh probably 8 by 10 or a good 4 by 5 where he's got tilt and correction. So that he can get absolutely square negative and then have it printed again square and to the exact size of the door so that you end up with two photo murals of the toilet doors, exactly the size of the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just switch them.
Okay.
You put the men's on the women's and the women's on the men's. So, you know, the environment inside is one that people are uptight about anyway, and if there's, you know, any kind of confusion about it,
pianist plays the notes, but within that kind of situation, there's ample room for both to make a statement of their own.
Robert Morris?
I want a lensable, flatten things out as much as possible, and also take just a very small section of the body.
Right.
I don't know if was described to you the kind of thing I want to do, but I wanted to have the model shirtless running into a glass door, and I don't want the glass door to shatter or anything, but I want the action of the flesh squeezed up against the glass, flattened out.
What section of the body?
Well, I was thinking of the shoulder.
All right.
Now, not the head, but just the shoulder or the upper part.
Yes.
And the model, if we can shoot several sequences, that would be fine.
Yeah.
We could do one where he wouldn't go through the door, but would just come at an angle, say about a 60-degree angle, and hit the glass or impact against the glass, and he would frame on that, so the camera would be stationary, and the body would come into the frame, hit the glass, impact against the glass, and then move away. And I've made other films where I don't have really anything to do with looking through the camera. It's just somebody else is so much better at it than I am. It's a matter of my describing what I have, what I want, and then having that done.
Bruce Nauman in California tells Roger Anda how to perform his piece.
Latitude. If you were to stand in one place, you take the phone. Here's what I want you to do, eventually, is to take the telephone or the receiver, whichever we can manipulate.
Right.
If we can use the telephone, I'd like you to be able to clamp it between your thighs.
Uh-huh.
So that you don't break the connection. You have to be careful of the dial and the button.
During what?
And you can clamp it between your thighs and cross your ankle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then put the receiver down or let it dangle and hold your arms straight out from your shoulders with your palms up.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers tight together.
Shall I just try that now?
And looking straight ahead.
Uh-huh.
If you want to try it and then tell me if it works out all right.
Okay. Will this be just for a moment, or will I need to do that for a prolonged period?
For a prolonged period.
Oh.
First, let me finish describing it then.
Mm-hmm.
After you've got yourself in that position, the project is to try and jump up and down on a cadence, which I will give to you.
Yeah.
And you can continue that cadence, and then I can hang up or I can continue to stay on the line. It doesn't matter.
Continuing to hold the telephone?
Trying to hold the telephone. Legs, yeah.
Mm.
And you're to continue to jump until the end of the tape.
Holding the phone?
Yeah.
So that it's visible or what?
Oh, yeah.
Because it will be, I guess.
Yeah, it would be visible.
Well, you want me to hold the phone between my knees, sort of?
Yeah, you have the whole telephone there?
Just the speaker, receiver.
Part.
Yeah.
Can you get the whole telephone in there, or is the cord too short?
The cord's too short.
Okay, just the receiver.
Thank God, that would be overly difficult.
Klaus Oldenburg.
Some things, in one way, it would be a way to keep up with what I was doing. Like I would say, maybe finished a model of ice bag today, or something like that. There would be certain events that happened to me, or I met so and so, or something happened to me, So there would be a kind of a living with me, something like Oppenheimer. Following the pattern of thought, thinking, and so on.
Yeah, it is very, very personal type.
It's very personal, yeah. And then I might put a poem in, or whatever I felt like, or an observation on something, you know, whatever it occurred to my mind. There would almost always be a constant sense of the weather and the place and my events, you know.
Good.
So that it would be today. You could call it today with Klaus Olsberg, if you want. Idea, see, one thing I wanted to get in here is the idea of seances and spirit writing. You know, when the seer is getting a message from the other world, she writes it usually on a black.
Now, do you want the